You're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. Tomorrow is graduation day at the University of Michigan. This year, the university celebrates its bicentennial. Now, think about that. A public university was established in Michigan 20 years before Michigan was even a state. Here to talk about those early days is Terry McDonald. He's a professor of history and the director of the Bentley Historical Library at the University of Michigan. This story does not begin in Ann Arbor, but it begins in Detroit. What influenced the university's founders to even attempt something like this in what was then basically the frontier?
The American Congress, before the Continental Congress, before the American Constitution actually passed a bill in 1787 called the Northwest Ordinance, which was designed to organize the states which were then thought to be the old Northwest, including Michigan and Ohio and Illinois and others. And in that bill was included funding for education in all of those areas. So the federal government had made the federal lands available for sale to support all levels of education. And so in the early 19th century, Michigan's territorial governor decided to open up a school system and to some extent starting with the university at the top.
So was there a model for a public university? I mean, we had Harvard and some of the other Ivy League schools, but did we have public universities at that time?
Almost all the universities existing in the country at that time were not only private but religious. So the idea of establishing a public, non-secular university was quite unique.
So there's this concept of a university in Detroit, but it doesn't get off the ground right away. The town, the city, is really not that big. It's 5,000 people in Detroit at the time. No public schools are even a model for that. So what was elementary and high school like, and what was the role of this early version of the University of Michigan in Detroit?
Well, the main thing about college in the early 19th century was that in order to be admitted to most colleges and universities had what was called the classical curriculum, which was basically embedded in the ancient languages of Greek and Latin. So to present yourself for admission to college, you had to know those languages before you could come. Not surprisingly, this cut down the demand. The number of freshmen who are eligible in any area who could actually use those languages. And in Michigan, you had a very, very busy frontier kind of setting, and so very few people could actually present the required curricula, the required prereqs necessary to be admitted.
So how did that affect the founders and their plans for a university in Detroit?
The founders, who were very interesting, a Catholic priest named Gabriel Richard and a Protestant minister called Richard Monteith, both of whom were fluent in all these languages. Most of the most highly educated people in America in the early 19th century, in fact, were clergy. They completely designed a classical curriculum university, which they expected to be organized around the classical languages, but also that had 13 other disciplines, economics, anthropology, all kinds of other things. They had a very, very broad idea of what a university should contain, and they were to be the first two professors.
Now, the idea of a public school, a public college at that time, didn't necessarily mean tax-supported like it does today. They didn't call it tuition either. They called it subscription. Tell me the difference between tuition and subscription.
The citizens of Detroit in 1817, in a relatively short period of time, in the summer of 1817, actually put up $5,000 to actually open the university. But in the long run, it was funded by the sale of federal lands in the territory of Michigan. And so those were the two streams of income.
So it was subsidized quite a bit.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where was this University of Michigan located in Detroit?
On Bates Street. There's a parking ramp there now and a historical marker on it. Relatively nondescript two-story building. You know, it was not expensive to build, and you wouldn't have necessarily thought it was a very unique kind of a place when it opened up.
And it was used for quite a while, a couple of decades, right?
It was used for a couple of decades, but there were no collegiate courses offered. The closest it came was as kind of a college prep place. But for most of that time, it was used – it ultimately was used by the Detroit Public Schools.
I want to play a little bit of something for you. This was aired on WUOM, our flagship station, 50 years ago for the sesquicentennial.
Fill your tankards deep with wine. Drink a health to Michigan. In that sparkling flood divine. Drink a health to
To the Cornflower and the Maize, a series of programs marking the 150th anniversary of the University of Michigan.
I love that announcer's voice. That was the idea of a true radio professional back there. So that gets us to Ann Arbor. When and why did the University of Michigan move from Detroit to Ann Arbor?
Well, when Michigan was admitted to the Union in 1837, the state legislature basically began kind of reauthorizing everything. And so they passed a bill reestablishing the University of Michigan, and they opened up a competition among cities to apply to have it located there.
I was just in Jackson recently. There were three things that cities in Michigan wanted more than anything else: the university,
that's right,
a prison,
that's right,
or to be the state capital.
That's right. I'm sure at the time it was thought to be a bit of a booby prize. The Ann Arbor Land Company, which was a group of land speculators who were trying to encourage people to come to Ann Arbor and therefore make their land more valuable, actually encouraged the location of this of the university in Ann Arbor by offering the 40 acres, which of course is the diag in the central campus area. And one of the early historians of the university claims they also spread shares in the Ann Arbor Land Company through the state legislature to help make sure the vote went the right way.
Okay. Those early days in Ann Arbor, how many students, how many professors were at the school when they first opened here?
Well, there were four faculty members, all of whom were ordained ministers, and there were, I think, a grand total after a little bit of about eight students, I think six freshmen, two sophomores.
Wow. At the University of Michigan, Associate Dean for Undergraduate Education Angela Dillard has researched slavery in the North, which is not commonly understood. I read a book called Jefferson's Hammer about William Henry Harrison, who had been governor of the territory, which included Michigan, that you were talking about earlier. He worked hard to – he was from Virginia – a plantation owner. He worked hard to turn a blind eye to slavery in the territory. So did slaves have a role in the founding of the University of Michigan?
There were slaves in Michigan when the university was opened. There were a small number, we think maybe about three slaveholders who actually participated in the subscription to build the building of the University of Michigan, but that's the only connection we know about.
Wow. It's amazing you don't think about slavery
right.
in Michigan,
mm-hmm.
but there it is.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Michigan is celebrating its bicentennial at graduation ceremonies tomorrow. We've been speaking with Professor of History and the Director of the Bentley Historical Library at the University, Terry McDonald. So how should we properly celebrate the 200th anniversary of University of Michigan?
I think that an important way to think about this is name another institution that's been doing so well for 200 years. Actually, there aren't that many. It's quite a remarkable record of accomplishment and not just duration, but incredible success over that time period. Michigan rapidly became one of the most important universities in America, certainly was such by the middle of the 19th century, and has been ever since.
Thanks very much for coming in.